He wakes to silence. The house is cold. She left hours ago. Only her scent lingers. On the pillow, the sheets. When she returns, it's the same pattern. Distant, withdrawn, until she needs him. Only then does she come alive. Soft words, intimate touches. Then distance again. He tries to bridge the gap, to find warmth in their marriage. But one evening, he notices something. Her phone buzzes. Boss's name lights up the screen. A pattern begins. Secret lunches. Late night texts. Sudden emotional warmth. He follows. She's not coming home for love. She comes home for sex. And to anchor herself while she's dating the boss. When confronted, she weeps, gasps, accuses him of emotional violence, calls the police, files abuse claims. He's unmoored. Confusion, accusations, betrayal swirl. Is she the victim or the predator? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Quiet Drift. The coffee had gone cold again. Michael sat at the edge of the kitchen table, stirring a teaspoon into a mug he didn't plan to drink from. The spoon clinked against the ceramic in a slow, rhythmic loop. It was just past 9 p.m. Late, even for her. But no text, no call, not even a voice note like she used to send when they first got married. He stared at the front door. For most people, home was where the heart lived. For Michael, it had become where he waited. And lately, it felt more like a holding cell than a home. His wife, Naomi, used to fill this space with noise. Her favorite podcasts on speaker while she cooked. Loud laughs from phone calls with friends, even arguments with him that used to matter. Now, all that remained was silence. Pierced only by her key in the lock when she returned, always late, always smiling just enough to make him second-guess his instincts. When she finally arrived that night, she was humming. "Hey, babe," she said, breezing past him, dropping her purse by the entryway, and heading straight for the bedroom. Michael followed her with his eyes, but didn't move. "You didn't answer my text." She reappeared in the hallway, already in one of his old t-shirts that she always wore when she wanted. She claimed she feared for her safety, claimed he was unpredictable. Michael felt sick as he read it. Not because any of it was true, but because he knew it would sound true to anyone who didn't know better. There were no bruises, no recordings, no hard evidence. But she didn't need any of that. All she needed was the illusion. Attorney Tasha Martin read the documents with surgical calm. "She's smart," she said, flipping through the pages. "She used all the right keywords. Emotional volatility, unpredictable, felt unsafe." That language hits hard in court, especially in this climate. Michael sat across from her, face pale. "What happens now?" "She's requesting an emergency hearing. If the judge believes there's even a possibility of harm, they'll grant the protective order. That could mean you'll be legally barred from your own home, from contacting her, maybe even from your job if your workplace has policies around domestic allegations." Michael exhaled slowly, trying not to panic. "She's burning everything down." "No," Tasha said. "She's taking the house and torching the bridge behind her." That afternoon, Tasha walked him through strategy. "You're going to have to build your defense with evidence of her behavior, her inconsistency, her manipulation, her use of sex as a bargaining chip. Anything that paints a picture of someone weaponizing emotion." Michael hesitated. "That feels dirty." Tasha didn't blink. "This is dirty. You think the court sees innocence and guilt the way you do? They see paperwork, patterns, documentation. If you want to win, you need to stop thinking like a husband and start thinking like a defendant. Michael opened his phone and started scrolling. Late-night texts from Naomi that suddenly turned flirty after a fight. Screenshots of her blaming him for her emotional distance. Her saying, "If you'd stop pushing me away, maybe I wouldn't need Jordan so much." That one hit hardest. She had admitted it, barely veiled. She wasn't just using Michael as a backup plan. She was building her story on his bones. Later that night, he met Darius at a bar downtown. Somewhere dimly lit, anonymous. "She really filed abuse?" Darius asked, eyes wide. Michael nodded, sipping his drink. Darius leaned in. "Listen, I know a guy. Private, investigator. Real low-key. If she's seeing your boss, he'll find out." Michael hesitated. "I don't want to go down that road unless I have to." Darius scoffed. "You already went down that road. She called the cops on you. You're halfway to hell, man. You better find some gasoline and draw a map." 3 days later, Michael met the private investigator in a parking lot behind a dentist's office. His name was Clint. 50-something salt-and-pepper goatee, old-school charm with a cheap cigarette tucked behind his ear. He flipped open a notepad. "Name?" "Naomi Whitaker. Works for Kaler and Hess, marketing exec." "Who's the other guy?" "Jordan Becker, her boss." Clint nodded. "What do you want to know?" "Everything," Michael said. "Give me 3 days." While Clint dug into Naomi's movements, Tasha filed a motion to counter the restraining order. She attached the phone logs, the flirtatious messages, and even the message Naomi sent after her initial complaint, asking Michael to please talk to me when you calm down. "She's undermining her own story," Tasha said. "That helps." But Michael wasn't so sure. He still remembered the look on Naomi's face when the police showed up. She wasn't afraid. She wasn't panicked. She was prepared. By the time the hearing date arrived, Clint returned with a file. He tossed it on the desk in front of Michael and Tasha. "Your wife? She's had a standing dinner reservation at a rooftop lounge downtown every Wednesday for 3 months. Same table. 2 glasses of wine. Jordan Becker's name is on the booking." Michael opened the file. Photos, receipts, a screenshot of a security camera frame. Naomi leaning across the table, fingers grazing Jordan's wrist. Clint lit his cigarette. "That's not a boss-employee dinner. That's a romance." Michael felt cold. It wasn't about the betrayal anymore. It was about the manipulation, the lies, the fact that Naomi had built an entire legal case while sneaking around with a man who could fire her or promote her on a whim. And he, the husband she had turned into a villain, had simply stood there, holding the door open for her, waiting for affection. In court, the hearing moved quickly. Naomi sat on the left side of the room, in a cream blazer and black skirt. Her hair pinned into a modest bun, her expression stoic. She looked like a woman asking for protection. Michael sat beside Tasha, barely able to look at her. Naomi's attorney opened with a soft-voiced statement about fear, unpredictability, and emotional trauma. "She is not accusing him of violence," the attorney said. "She is saying that emotional abuse is just as damaging. The yelling, the surveillance, the gaslighting. She no longer feels safe in her home." Then Naomi took the stand. She dabbed her eyes with a tissue and talked about how Michael would interrogate her after work, how he'd accuse her of cheating if she wore makeup, how he'd follow her around the house like a warden. "He would demand to know where I was," she said. If I didn't answer fast enough, he'd raise his voice. It felt like I was always doing something wrong. Michael's jaw tightened. Then it was Tasha's turn. She stood, calm and precise. "Miss Whittaker," she said, "can you tell us why you sent this message? Please talk to me when you calm down, the morning after your alleged abuse incident." Naomi blinked. I was scared. I didn't know how else to reach him." "You were scared," Tasha repeated. "Yet you invited him to speak to you the next day." No answer. "Did he ever physically threaten you?" "No, but..." "Did he ever raise a hand?" "No, but emotional abuse." "Did he ever say he would hurt you?" Naomi paused. "No." Tasha handed the judge Clint's report. "Your Honor, here's evidence that Miss Whittaker has been engaging in a romantic relationship with her supervisor, Jordan Becker, for the past several months. We contend that this restraining order is not about fear, but about control. A tactical move to isolate and discredit my client before filing for divorce." The judge flipped through the file. Then he looked at Naomi. Her face didn't move. The hearing ended with a single sentence. "The request for a temporary protective order is denied." Outside the courtroom, Naomi passed Michael without a word. No anger, no shame, just calculation. He watched her walk away, heels clicking down the marble hallway like nothing had happened, like she hadn't just tried to erase him from his own life. And in that moment, he realized something chilling. This wasn't over. It had only just begun. Chapter 5. Behind the texts, Michael had never been the kind of man who snooped. He didn't read Naomi's emails, didn't scroll through her messages while she slept. Even when his gut told him something was wrong, he gave her space. Trust, after all, was the last thing holding their marriage together. But now that trust was gone, and in its place was a sharp instinct for survival. Back at Darius's apartment, Michael spread Naomi's text screenshots across the table like puzzle pieces. He wasn't just looking for proof of cheating anymore. He was looking for a pattern. And soon, he found one. There were texts that came like clockwork right after fights. "I'm sorry. I just need you to understand me. I know it's hard. I'm trying. Let's not fight. Come to bed." They were soft, sweet, even seductive. But they always arrived after she'd pushed him to the edge, after emotional detachment, cold avoidance, even belittling comments. He remembered reading that this kind of thing had a name. Intermittent reinforcement. Push, pull. Withhold affection, then flood it when he became distant. Punish vulnerability. Reward silence. It wasn't love. It was training. Michael went back further in their message history, over a year's worth. She had been playing the same game the entire time. One week, she'd call him her person. The next, she'd go 3 days without speaking to him unless she needed something. Money, a signature, a body to lie next to. There was even a string of messages, 6 months before the abuse allegation, that stunned him. "Jordan says I'm too emotional, but he listens to me in a way you don't. I don't want to hurt you, but sometimes I feel more myself when I'm not here. I'm trying to make this work. You're the one who shuts down." Jordan, always Jordan. He wasn't just the other man. He was the emotional barometer Naomi used to compare Michael's worth. And she made sure to keep that comparison alive by dangling sex, intimacy, and guilt like weapons. Michael forwarded everything to Tasha. "This is manipulation in its purest form," she replied. "Keep digging. If we can prove a pattern, we can destroy her credibility." That night, Michael sat with Clint, the private investigator, in the back booth of a diner. "She's not careful," Clint said, sipping lukewarm coffee. "She thinks using WhatsApp instead of regular texts makes her invisible." He pulled out a tablet and laid it on the table. "Got a guy who specializes in metadata scraping. Not illegal, not invasive, just digital crumbs people leave behind." On the screen were logs, timestamps, deleted message notices, even blurred screenshots of audio messages Naomi had sent Jordan late at night. Nothing explicit in words, but the tone, the context, said everything. Clint pointed to one. "Look at this. She sends him a 35-second voice message right after sleeping with you, timestamped 1:12 a.m., same night she told you she was too exhausted to talk." Michael stared at the waveform. "You can't hear what she's saying," Clint said, "but you can see when she said it, and that's enough to raise hell in court." Michael rubbed his temples. "Why didn't I see it before?" Clint shrugged. "You were married. That's how this works." Tasha laid out the new strategy the next morning. "We don't need to prove she cheated. We need to prove she lied. If she weaponized her sexuality to keep you emotionally dependent while building a romantic escape route, it shows intent. That's manipulation, not marriage." Michael paced the office. "She doesn't care what's true," he muttered. "She cares what sticks." Tasha nodded. "Exactly. So let's show the court what her glue is made of." The next week was a blur of preparation. Michael's affidavit now read more like a psychological profile than a victim statement. It included dates and screenshots of warm messages following cold spells. Voice messages sent to Jordan within minutes of post-fight intimacy. Naomi's pattern of gaslighting followed by sexual initiation. Her documented comment, "If I leave, people will think you were the monster." Tasha smiled at that one. "That line alone wins us the sympathy angle." They also prepared to file a counterclaim for emotional abuse. Not as a revenge tactic, but as a way to neutralize her legal leverage. And then there was the nuclear option, alienation of affection. It was a little-known civil tort, only legal in a handful of U.S. states, including North Carolina. It allowed one spouse to sue a third party for deliberately interfering in a marriage. In other words, he could sue Jordan. Michael sat stunned when Tasha explained it. "You're saying I could legally hold him responsible?" "If we prove he pursued her while knowing she was married, yes. You'd have a solid case. Texts, photos, recurring dinner reservations. It's all ammunition." Michael sat back, the weight of everything catching up to him. He didn't want money. He wanted truth. But in Naomi's world, truth was a tool. And now finally, he had one of his own. 3 days later, Naomi called him. It was the first time they'd spoken since the failed protective order hearing. Her voice was quiet, careful. "Can we meet?" Michael almost said no. But something in her tone caught him off guard. He agreed. They met at a neutral spot, an open-air cafe downtown. She wore sunglasses and a scarf, even though it was nearly 80 degrees out. She looked tired. She didn't hug him. Didn't smile. She got right to it. "I don't want this to turn into a war." Michael laughed once. Bit late for that. "I panicked, Michael. I didn't know how to get out. You were changing. We were falling apart." "So you lied?" "I was scared." "Of what?" Naomi didn't answer right away. Then finally, "Of being the bad guy." Michael leaned back. "You're not afraid of being the bad guy. You're afraid of being seen as the bad guy." She looked away. "I loved you," she whispered. "Yeah," he said, "but not enough to tell the truth." As they left the cafe, Naomi stopped him. Please don't sue him. Michael looked at her, silent. I know you can, she said. You've got everything. But he didn't mean to come between us. Michael narrowed his eyes. Didn't mean to, he said. He sat across from me at the company party and shook my hand while he was sleeping with my wife. So don't stand here and defend him. Not now. Naomi swallowed hard. He stepped closer, voice steady. You already told your story. Now I'm going to tell mine. Then he walked away. That night, Michael looked over the folder one last time. The texts, the audio logs, the lies. He hadn't imagined any of it. He had been the anchor she tied herself to when she didn't know where else to go. But now he was the one letting go. Chapter 6. The Boss Revealed. Jordan Becker's office was on the 23rd floor, overlooking the city. Michael had been there only once, last year's holiday party back when. Jordan had shaken his hand warmly, smiled at Naomi, and joked about how she was his best hire yet. Now Michael stood outside the heavy oak doors, his pulse steady but fast. He didn't bother making an appointment. He didn't call ahead. He simply waited until Jordan's assistant stepped away from her desk, then walked in unannounced. Jordan looked up, startled. The flash of guilt that crossed his face was brief, but Michael saw it clearly. The boss quickly composed himself, forcing a neutral smile. Michael, this is unexpected. Michael closed the door softly behind him. You sleeping with Naomi? That was unexpected, too. Jordan glanced nervously at the door. Listen, this isn't the place. I think it is, Michael replied, sitting down casually across from Jordan. You chose the place when you hired her, when you took her to rooftop dinners, when you texted her at midnight after she was with me. So, yeah, it's exactly the place. Jordan's confidence wavered slightly, but he managed a thin smile. I think there's been some misunderstanding. Michael leaned forward. I've got messages. I've got reservations. I've got photos. We're way past misunderstanding. Jordan's face reddened slightly. Are you threatening me? No, Michael said calmly. I'm giving you a chance to tell your side before I let the lawyers tell it for you. Jordan took a deep breath, his expression shifting from arrogant to wary. Fine, he said quietly. Close the blinds. Jordan began slowly, choosing each word with care. It wasn't the arrogant, powerful executive speaking. It was a man caught in his own mess, desperate to untangle it. It wasn't supposed to happen, he admitted. I never planned it. Michael raised an eyebrow. But you didn't stop it. Jordan nodded, looking down at the polished mahogany desk. She was different, vulnerable, always professional, but emotionally open. We talked a lot at first. Work, life, even you. Michael's jaw tightened. Me? Jordan nodded slowly. She told me you two were drifting apart, that you were closed off, controlling. She made it sound like you'd lost interest in her a long time ago. Michael almost laughed. And you believed her? Jordan met Michael's eyes. Yeah, I did. But now, I don't know. So, why keep going? Michael asked. Jordan sighed, shrugging slightly. She was persuasive. She said she felt stuck, afraid of what you'd do if she left. She said your mood scared her. Michael leaned forward, anger flashing. Did you ever see a single bruise? Ever hear me threaten her? No, Jordan admitted. But I didn't need to. She made me feel like I was saving her. Michael let the silence hang for a moment. You weren't saving her. You were her escape plan. Jordan didn't respond at first, staring blankly out the window. I know that now. Michael took a long breath. You still seeing her? Jordan shook his head slowly. Not for a week. After the hearing, I told her we had to stop. It got too complicated. She panicked, said you were going to sue me, ruin my career, destroy my reputation. Michael smiled grimly. She wasn't wrong. Jordan looked up sharply. What do you want? I want the truth, Michael said simply. And I want you to tell it to my lawyer. Jordan stared at him, disbelief turning to resignation. And if I refuse? You won't, Michael replied. Because Naomi used you too. If you don't speak now, she'll spin the narrative again, and this time, you'll be the villain. 2 days later, Michael sat beside Tasha in a conference room. Across from them sat Jordan Becker, his lawyer beside him. Jordan spoke calmly into the recorder, carefully admitting to each dinner, each text, each moment he crossed the line from boss to lover. He didn't hide anything. His fear had shifted entirely from Naomi's reaction to protecting himself. She told me she needed emotional support, Jordan said. She implied that Michael was manipulative, even abusive. She used specific words to make me feel protective, unsafe, trapped, isolated. But I never saw evidence, only what she told me. Did she ever explicitly mention leaving Michael? Tasha asked. Jordan hesitated. No. She told me it wasn't safe to leave yet. She said he'd retaliate, get violent or vindictive. It kept me quiet. Did she seem fearful of Michael? Jordan paused again, his face conflicted. Not in person. Only when she wanted something from me. Michael swallowed hard, listening to each revelation. Hearing Naomi's manipulation laid bare by another victim felt strangely validating and deeply unsettling. When Jordan finished, Tasha turned off the recorder. She glanced at Michael, satisfied. This testimony will neutralize her credibility. There's no way she can claim emotional abuse convincingly now. Michael nodded slowly. Jordan glanced at him briefly, almost apologetically. Michael, he said quietly, I'm sorry. Michael held his gaze briefly, then stood. You're not forgiven, but at least you told the truth. Michael didn't return to work after Jordan's confession. He took leave, his mind overwhelmed. Naomi's betrayal, the emotional chess match, it had worn him thin. That evening, Naomi called him repeatedly. Michael didn't pick up. He let her messages pile up, each one more desperate, more accusing. How could you confront him like that? You've ruined everything. You didn't need to drag him into this. If you hurt his career, I'll never forgive you. The irony almost made Michael laugh. Even now, she protected Jordan more fiercely than she had ever protected their marriage. At midnight, Michael's phone lit up again. A message from Naomi, different in tone. Please come home. We need to talk face to face. For a moment, he considered ignoring it. But something compelled him to see her one last time. To hear what she'd say when her lies had nowhere left to hide. When he arrived, the house was dark, except for the faint glow from the kitchen. Naomi sat at the table, her posture slumped, eyes shadowed. She didn't move when he entered. He stood silently, waiting. She finally looked up, eyes glistening. You've destroyed everything, she whispered. My reputation, my career. Jordan won't speak to me. Do you understand what you've done? Michael felt oddly calm. You destroyed yourself. I just showed people who you really are. She shook her head bitterly. You don't get it. I had control until you got involved. You turned everyone against me. He stared at her, incredulous. You accused me of abuse. You used me. And I'm the one who destroyed things? Her eyes hardened. I was protecting myself. No, he said softly. You were protecting the lie. But lies have expiration dates. Yours expired. Naomi stood suddenly, face contorted with emotion. I never meant to hurt you. You meant every word, Michael said coldly. You just didn't expect to get caught. He turned toward the door. Naomi's voice broke behind him. You won't win this, she called out weakly. People always believe the woman. He looked back over his shoulder, his voice steady. This time, they won't. And he left her standing alone, finally stripped of every illusion she had so carefully built. Chapter 7. Exposing the Anchor. The courtroom was colder than Michael expected. Rows of polished benches stretched behind him. The judge sat elevated at the far end, framed by two flags. Naomi's attorney shuffled papers, her face pinched with unease. Naomi herself stared forward, eyes straight ahead, unreadable. Michael's attorney, Tasha Martin, glanced briefly at him, then stood confidently, holding a small stack of documents. Michael's stomach churned, not with doubt, but anticipation. This was the moment he'd fought for. Not revenge, but truth. The judge cleared her throat. Ms. Martin, you may begin. Tasha took a deep breath and spoke clearly. Your Honor, today we will demonstrate that Naomi Whittaker has engaged in deliberate emotional manipulation, deceit, and character assassination against her husband, Michael. Through carefully documented evidence, including text messages, testimony, and a sworn affidavit by Jordan Becker, Ms. Whittaker's supervisor and lover, we will establish that Ms. Whittaker used allegations of emotional abuse not to protect herself, but to control and ultimately eliminate her husband's presence in her life. The courtroom murmured softly. Naomi stiffened, her attorney whispering something sharp in her ear. Tasha proceeded calmly. We called Jordan Becker to the stand. Jordan walked forward, his expression somber, eyes avoiding Naomi's piercing stare. He swore himself in, sitting rigidly upright. Mr. Becker, Tasha began evenly, were you involved in an intimate relationship with Naomi Whittaker? Jordan nodded slowly. Yes. Did Miss Whittaker frequently describe her husband, Michael, as emotionally abusive? Yes, Jordan said softly. She said he made her feel unsafe, trapped, controlled. Did you ever witness any signs of physical or emotional harm? No, Jordan admitted, eyes downcast. I only ever heard Naomi's account. Tasha continued carefully. Did Naomi explicitly tell you her allegations were intended to give her leverage, if the marriage, something? She walked up behind him, wrapped her arms loosely around his neck, and kissed his cheek. Sorry, work was crazy. You know how Jordan gets when he's in one of his moods. Jordan, her boss, charming, wealthy, always calling, always sending her out of town for strategy sessions. Michael used to feel flattered when Naomi rose quickly through the ranks at her corporate job. Now, every mention of Jordan twisted his stomach. You eat yet? She asked, already knowing the answer. He shook his head. Naomi turned his chin to face her and smiled. Why don't you come to bed first? That was her pattern. No real conversation. No warmth unless it was laced with suggestion. He could count on her for one thing, sex. That was when she came alive. Her distance would vanish, replaced by softness, craving, sometimes even tenderness. But when it was over, she'd pull away. Sometimes, literally. Sometimes she'd roll to her side without a word and sleep. Other times she'd check her phone under the blanket, screen glow barely hidden. He followed her to the bedroom anyway. The next morning, she was gone by the time he woke. Her side of the bed was cold, just like the coffee he poured again as he sat alone in the kitchen. A text arrived on his phone. "Don't forget to pay the gas bill. Love you." No good morning, no check-in on how he slept. Just a chore. Michael stared at the message longer than he needed to. The words were casual, practical, just enough to maintain the illusion of connection. He tapped out a reply. "Where are you?" No response. Later that afternoon, Michael left work early. He needed fresh air, or at least a change in scenery. Something wasn't right. Hadn't been for months. The house, once vibrant with shared plans and honeymoon energy, now felt like a shell. He walked past Naomi's office building on impulse. He didn't know why. He wasn't spying, at least not consciously. But something had shifted in him lately. A silent unraveling. He stood across the street, staring up at the glass windows. Her floor was high up. The lights were still on. A few silhouettes moved in the distance. He was about to leave when he saw them. Naomi and Jordan. Through the glass, they were laughing. She touched his arm, leaned close to whisper something. Jordan smiled wide. Two ended. Jordan hesitated, swallowing nervously. "Yes. Once, after an argument with Michael, she told me she had everything documented, just in case." "Just in case what?" Tasha pressed gently. "Just in case she needed to end things cleanly without losing control," Jordan replied, his voice quiet but steady. The judge took notes, expression thoughtful. Naomi's jaw tightened visibly. Tasha pivoted slightly. "Did you feel manipulated by Ms. Whitaker?" Jordan exhaled deeply. "At the time, no. But looking back, yes. Naomi often implied Michael was dangerous. I felt responsible for protecting her." Michael glanced toward Naomi. She looked down, her knuckles white as she gripped the table edge. "Thank you," Tasha concluded, returning to her seat. Naomi's attorney stood quickly, hoping to regain footing. "Mr. Becker, did Naomi ever ask you directly to fabricate stories about abuse?" Jordan hesitated, then answered, "No, not directly." "Thank you," Naomi's lawyer said confidently. "No further questions." But the damage was done. The courtroom had already heard Jordan's hesitation, his discomfort evident. It wasn't explicit lies Naomi had fed him, but subtle manipulation, enough to cloud perception. Next, Michael was called to testify. He took the stand, feeling every pair of eyes on him, curious, judgmental, sympathetic. He spoke clearly and steadily, describing Naomi's pattern of coldness followed by sudden intimacy, her selective affection, her emotional distancing, and finally, the night she called the police. "Did you ever threaten her?" Tasha asked directly. "No," Michael said firmly. "We argued, yes, I raised my voice. But I never threatened or intimidated her." "Did Naomi's behavior ever confuse you emotionally?" "Yes, constantly. One moment she was affectionate, the next distant and cold. She'd disappear emotionally, and then return for intimacy. It felt deliberate." "And what did you eventually discover?" Michael inhaled deeply, making sure to look directly at the judge. "She was having an affair. She used my emotional confusion to keep me off balance, unsure, dependent." Naomi's attorney cross-examined briefly, but Michael's sincerity, supported by evidence, made her efforts futile. Finally, Naomi herself took the stand, eyes glistening, voice trembling, slightly. "I never meant to hurt Michael. Yes, our marriage was struggling, but it wasn't manipulation, it was survival. I felt afraid." Tasha stood calmly. "Afraid of what?" "His temper," Naomi insisted. "His constant accusations." "Yet," Tasha replied carefully, "you continued engaging intimately with him after arguments, after moments you described as emotionally abusive. Why? Naomi paused, swallowing hard. I hoped intimacy would repair things. Or, Tasha countered, you used intimacy to regain emotional leverage. Naomi's eyes flared, voice strained. That's not true. Tasha retrieved a document. Do you recognize these texts you sent Michael after your arguments? Naomi looked down. Her face paled slightly. Tasha read aloud, calmly. I'm sorry. Come to bed. Let's forget tonight happened. Please forgive me. I need you. Do these messages sound like someone genuinely afraid, Ms. Whittaker? Naomi remained silent. And this? Tasha continued, holding another document. Your late-night voice messages to Jordan Becker immediately following intimacy with your husband. Why contact him moments afterward? Naomi's voice cracked slightly. I needed comfort. Tasha leaned forward. Or validation. Emotional anchoring with your husband, emotional connection with your lover. Perfectly balanced until your husband confronted you. Isn't that true? Naomi's voice broke. Frustration evident. I wasn't trying to hurt anyone. Tasha's voice softened, sympathetic yet firm. No. You were protecting your reputation, your choices, your control. The only anchor you needed from Michael was stability, so you could explore elsewhere safely. The courtroom grew quiet, absorbing every word. Naomi lowered her head, unable to respond. The judge finally addressed both attorneys. Thank you. I have sufficient information. Minutes later, the judge spoke clearly, her words measured. Given the substantial documentation, testimony, and corroborating evidence, it's clear that Ms. Whittaker's allegations of emotional abuse lack consistency and credibility. Instead, the evidence strongly suggests manipulation for personal gain, leveraging allegations to exert emotional control over Mr. Whittaker. Thus, the court dismisses all allegations against Michael Whittaker. Relief flooded Michael. Naomi's shoulders sank, face pale and empty. The illusion she'd carefully woven unraveled in public view. The gavel struck sharply. Case dismissed. Michael rose slowly, feeling lighter. Naomi passed him silently, eyes downcast, defeated, not by him, but by her own deception. Outside, fresh air hit Michael's face, cool and comforting. Tasha smiled gently beside him. You okay? Michael nodded. I think I will be. Across the courthouse steps, Jordan lingered, distant. Michael glanced briefly his way. Jordan nodded softly, acknowledgement without forgiveness. It was closure enough. That night, back in the empty house, Michael packed quietly. Every memory lingered, once warm, now faded. This had been his home, his marriage, his dream. But anchors could weigh you down as much as keep you steady. Before he left, Michael looked around one final time. He placed his wedding ring softly on the kitchen table, beside a folded piece of paper, with just three words written neatly across it. Truth sets free. Then, without looking back, he closed the door behind him, stepping confidently into whatever came next. The anchor was gone. He was finally free. Wide for a boss. Michael froze. It wasn't the closeness that stunned him. It was how happy she looked. Not the tense half smiles he got. Not the mechanical affection. No. This was real joy. Like he hadn't seen in months. And she was giving it to another man. That night, when she walked through the door, she was glowing. Flushed cheeks, light steps. Hey, babe, she said brightly. He was sitting in the living room, lights dimmed, a beer in hand. How was work? Busy, she said, dropping her purse. Did you see my text about the gas bill? He didn't respond. Naomi picked up on the tension. She paused, then added, "You okay?" Michael studied her. She looked freshly touched up. Lip gloss, light perfume, subtle changes, but he noticed. She had stopped trying to impress him weeks ago. "You see Jordan today?" he asked flatly. Her smile faltered, only slightly. "Of course. We had that team meeting, remember? Why?" "You looked happy," he said. She blinked, unsure how to respond. "What's that supposed to mean? You don't smile like that when you're here." Naomi crossed her arms. "Are you seriously accusing me of something right now, after the week I've had?" "I'm not accusing. I'm observing." She narrowed her eyes. "You always do this. Get in your head. Make things up. That's why I don't tell you things anymore. You twist them." He set the beer down, slowly. "Then tell me the truth." Silence. She turned away. That night, she didn't come to bed. She slept in the guest room. Michael lay awake, staring at the ceiling, his mind racing. He remembered a conversation with his best friend Darius from weeks back. "Man, some people don't need love. They need a landing pad, a soft place to crash when the world gets too loud." At the time, Michael didn't think it applied to him. Now, he wasn't so sure. Naomi didn't need him. She needed what he gave her. Stability, familiarity, a soft place to fall when things went wrong with Jordan. And when she wanted sex, that was the anchor, the rope back to safety, not connection. She only came home when she needed something. And he kept giving it. The next morning, Naomi was in the kitchen, dressed for work. She moved quickly, brushing past him like they were co-workers in a shared office. "Did you pay the gas?" she asked. "I saw you with him," Michael said. She froze. "I saw the way you touched his arm, the way you laughed." Naomi turned slowly, her voice calm but cold. "So, you're following me now? Just happened to be there?" She stepped closer, lowered her voice. "You always do this. Get paranoid. Controlling." "I'm not controlling." "You are. You think I'm cheating every time I smile at someone. You think I owe you something just because we're married." "We are married." She shook her head and grabbed her purse. "You need help," she said quietly. Then she left. Michael stood in the silence again. But this time, it wasn't empty. It was warning. Something was shifting. He felt it in the way she said, "Help." In the way she twisted his concern into paranoia. It wasn't defensive. It was rehearsed. He didn't know it yet, but that single word, "help," was her setup. And it was only the beginning. Chapter 2, Shadows of Intimacy. The next time Naomi touched him, it felt like strategy, not affection. She had been distant all week. No texts unless she needed something. No eye contact unless she was checking for a reaction. But then Friday came, and she stepped out of the shower, towel loose, her hair dripping, her expression soft, almost apologetic. She climbed into bed without a word and slid her hand across his chest. Michael tensed. "Let's just forget this week," she whispered. He didn't answer. His eyes stayed on the ceiling. But his body responded. It always did. He missed her, even if it wasn't real. They had sex that night. Slow at first, then urgent. Her hands gripped him like a lifeline. But something in her rhythm told the truth. It wasn't about passion. It was about power. She needed to feel in control again. She needed reassurance that he was still available. And Michael, still hungry for the woman he married, gave her everything, even though he felt empty after. In the early years, their intimacy had been electric. They'd sneak away from family dinners, send flirty texts from across the room, laugh through pillow talk. But now, it was silent, functional. He had read once that people in manipulative relationships often confuse sex with connection. That when words break down, touch becomes the only currency left. He hadn't understood it then. Now he was fluent in the language. Afterward, Naomi rolled to her side, pulling the covers around her like armor. No kiss, no thank you. Just soft breathing and the glow of her phone lighting up again. She typed something quickly, smiled faintly, then tucked it under her pillow. Michael watched her quietly. His stomach tightened. The next morning, she was all smiles. She made coffee. She even cooked eggs. She was nice. Michael almost bought into it until her phone buzzed again. And this time, it wasn't a name. It was a string of emojis, a wine glass, a heart, a flame. She didn't notice that he saw it, or maybe she did. "Going into the office for a bit," she said, sipping her coffee. "Jordan needs help prepping the Monday deck." Michael blinked. "On a Saturday?" She shrugged. "He works nonstop. I don't want to fall behind." He wanted to say something, to ask why she was wearing lipstick, why she'd chosen heels instead of flats. But all he said was, "Have fun." Naomi smiled without looking up and kissed his forehead, like a parent to a child. By noon, she was gone. Again. Michael sat at the kitchen table scrolling through articles on emotional infidelity, on how some partners don't cheat with their bodies, but with their attention. One line stood out. "If your partner only becomes affectionate when they feel you slipping away, that's not love. That's control." He closed the laptop. That night, Naomi didn't come home until after midnight. No text, no call. When she walked in, she didn't even look surprised that he was awake. "Long day," she said. Michael stood in the hallway, arms crossed. "You smell like wine." She dropped her keys on the table. "We had a client dinner. Was Jordan there?" She sighed, her back to him. "Why are you so obsessed with him?" "I'm obsessed with the way you light up around him." Naomi spun around. "And what about the way you don't light up around me? You think this is easy for me? Coming home to a man who doubts me, questions everything I say, who makes me feel like I'm constantly being watched." "You are being watched," he snapped. "By a man who used to be your husband." "Used to be," she echoed. Her eyes glinted. "So, what are we now?" Michael didn't answer. Naomi took a step closer, her voice lower now. "You want the truth? Fine. You've changed. You don't laugh anymore. You barely touch me unless I initiate it. And every time I do, you look at me like I'm a stranger." He laughed. One cold, bitter note. "You are a stranger." Silence fell between them. Naomi's chest rose and fell with sharp breaths. "I'm done having this conversation," she said finally. "You're paranoid. And I'm tired of pretending this marriage isn't suffocating me." She turned and walked into the bedroom, slamming the door behind her. Michael stood alone in the hallway. And for the first time, he wondered if she was setting the stage for something bigger. Not just distance, not just control, but war. The next few days were quiet, unnaturally so. Naomi barely spoke, but every night she touched him. Lightly, her hand on his thigh while they watched TV. A kiss on the shoulder when she passed him in the hallway. Just enough to blur the line between closeness and confusion. Michael started noticing a pattern. The colder her words, the warmer her touch. It was calculated, calibrated, and it worked. He felt himself losing his footing again. One night, as they lay in bed back to back, Michael said quietly, "Are you in love with him?" There was a pause, long enough to be loud. "No," she said finally. but I'm not in love with you either. She turned off the lamp. The next morning, she was up early, dressed in black slacks and a silk blouse. Professional. Perfect. Untouchable. He stood in the doorway, watching her fix her hair in the mirror. "I want to talk about us," he said. Naomi met his eyes in the mirror. "I don't." Michael stepped into the room. "I'm serious." "So am I," she replied. "I'm not doing this dance anymore. You want honesty? Here it is. I don't feel safe around you when you're like this." He froze. "Like what?" "Accusatory. Tense. Watching me like I'm doing something wrong." "I haven't laid a hand on you. You don't have to." Michael stared at her. "Is that what this is now? You're afraid of me?" "I'm saying," she said slowly, "that I'm documenting everything, just in case." That stopped him cold. Documenting. The word echoed in his head like a siren. He stepped back, stunned. "You're building a case?" "I'm protecting myself." She left moments later, heels clicking across the hardwood. Michael sat on the edge of the bed, numb. He realized then, she was playing the long game. The emotional anchoring, the selective affection, the distance followed by sex. It had all been rope, tying him in place, keeping him off balance, so that when she flipped the narrative, it would be too late for him to pull free. This wasn't about Jordan anymore. This was about erasing him. And for the first time, he wasn't just heartbroken. He was afraid. Chapter 3. The confrontation. Michael couldn't remember the last time he raised his voice. It wasn't in his nature. He wasn't the type to slam doors or throw furniture or bark orders. His anger was quiet, internalized. It stayed behind his ribs, coiled like a spring, until it settled into fatigue. But this time, he didn't recognize the man in the mirror. He was pacing the hallway outside their bedroom, fists clenched at his sides. Naomi had just walked in, 3 hours late. No call, no apology. Her lipstick was smudged, and her perfume clung to the air like smoke after a fire. And Michael had had enough. She walked past him like nothing was wrong. "Where were you?" he asked flatly. She paused. "I told you, I had a late meeting." "At a bar?" Naomi turned slowly, face unreadable. "What do you want me to say, Michael?" "I want the truth." She laughed, sharp, humorless. "You can't handle the truth. You want a version of me that hasn't existed for a long time. You want the woman who used to adore you? That woman's gone." She stepped closer. "You think keeping tabs on me is going to bring her back? You think accusations are intimacy?" He snapped. "Are you sleeping with him?" Naomi's jaw clenched. "Answer me." "Stop yelling," she said sharply. "You're scaring me." His voice lowered. "I'm not yelling." "You are," she said, backing away slowly. "And I'm not doing this with you." She grabbed her phone and turned toward the bedroom. He followed. "Don't walk away, not this time." She spun on him. "Don't follow me." "I'm your husband. Then act like it." "I am," he shouted. "I've been acting like it every single day while you come and go like I'm a stranger you sleep with when it suits you." She recoiled like he'd struck her. He hadn't. Not even close. But she blinked rapidly, tears welling up on cue. "You're unstable," she whispered. "You're paranoid and violent and obsessed." Michael was frozen. She raised the phone and dialed. One ring, two. Then, "Yes, I need to report someone. My husband." His chest tightened. "What are you doing?" "He's threatening me." He stepped back, horrified. "I never laid a hand on you." "Doesn't matter," she said coldly. "It's emotional abuse." The police came 40 minutes later. Two officers, both calm but stern. Naomi answered the door like she was the wounded one, like she needed protection. Her voice shook when she told them he had cornered her, yelled, followed her into the bedroom. Michael tried to speak, but the officers asked him to sit down. "This is just a preliminary report," one said. "We're not placing charges, but you should know your wife feels unsafe. Do you have somewhere else you can stay for the night?" Michael stared at them. "She's lying." The officer looked at him. "Neutral, procedural. She says you raised your voice, that she felt threatened. And legally, we have to document that. I didn't threaten her. She says otherwise." Naomi stood behind them, arms crossed, face wiped clean of emotion. Her eyes met Michael's briefly, and in that second, he saw it. Satisfaction, not fear, not pain. Satisfaction. She was setting the scene, writing the script. Michael slept in his car that night, parked outside his friend Darius's building. He didn't knock, couldn't. He wasn't ready to explain what just happened, not because he was guilty, but because he knew how it looked. A man accused of emotional abuse, a wife in tears. There were no bruises, no recordings, no screaming match caught on camera, just her word. And for now, that was enough to exile him from his own home. The next morning, he finally texted Darius. "Need to crash for a few days. Can't explain yet." Darius responded instantly. "Come up. 3B, doors unlocked." Michael climbed the stairs with a knot in his chest. Darius was standing in the doorway, barefoot, coffee in hand. "You look like hell," he said. Michael stepped inside. "I think my wife just filed the first act of a domestic abuse case against me." Darius blinked. "Wait, what?" "She called the cops last night. Said I was threatening her. Emotional abuse." "Did you touch her?" "No." "Yell?" "I raised my voice. I was pissed. But I didn't threaten her." Darius sat down, face serious. "Man, this is bigger than an argument. If she's documenting this, it means she's laying the groundwork for divorce. Custody, maybe alimony. She's weaponizing the narrative." Michael nodded slowly. "I think she's been planning this for a while." That afternoon, Michael met with an attorney, a woman named Tasha Martin, sharp, blunt, no nonsense. "She's manipulating perception," Tasha said after hearing the story. "This is a classic pre-divorce strategy. Emotional abuse is harder to prove than physical, but it's just as effective when building leverage." Michael leaned forward. "I didn't do anything wrong." "You're already losing," she said. "Because she's telling the story first. You need to start gathering everything. Texts, emails, notes, any pattern of behavior that shows she's been gaslighting or manipulating you." Michael hesitated. "What if it's all just circumstantial?" Tasha stared at him. "Right now, everything is circumstantial, until someone turns it into evidence." She slid a notepad across the desk. "Start writing. Everything you remember, every conversation, every inconsistency." That night, Michael sat alone in Darius's spare room, notebook in hand. He began to write. "She only initiates physical contact after arguments. Always texts someone immediately after sex, never me. Said she's documenting things in case she needs protection. Made sure to cry in front of the cops. Mentioned feeling unsafe multiple times before anything even happened." It read like a blueprint, a psychological operation. He flipped back to the first page and wrote in bold letters across the top, "She only comes home for sex." And underneath it, "And when she's ready to play the victim." Chapter 4. Legal Crossfire. The knock on the door came at 6:42 a.m. Michael opened it in a t-shirt and jeans, bleary-eyed from a night of little sleep. A man in a blazer stood there, flanked by a woman holding a manila envelope. Her voice was crisp. "You've been served." Michael stared at the envelope for a beat too long. Then he took it and closed the door without a word. Inside was the official petition. Temporary protective order request. Attached was Naomi's handwritten statement, 2 pages long. Allegations of emotional instability, controlling behavior, verbal threats,